This is Welcome Home Radio, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on locally owned KYNO. Brought to you by Judy's at Bullard and West and by the Community Housing Council. Now, here's your host, Don Scordino.
Well, good morning and welcome to Welcome Home Radio. This is Don Scordino, your host on our Valley's most informative real estate talk show. I can say informative today because we have Colleen and Brian Souza here. And you guys have been doing this for a minute or two.
Just a few.
You know a thing or two.
Yes, we do.
Been around the popsicle stand for a while, Don.
Yeah. All right. We do want to thank our sponsors, which is Judy's Home Decor at Bullard and West, where you can turn a house into a home, and also the Community Housing Council, which helps people keep their home if they're having a hard time. And I want to say this, and the two of you can comment on this about foreclosures, because, boy, when you go online, you just, especially as a realtor, we get all these advertisements about, hey, foreclosures are up, and the market's going to do this and that, and they want you to subscribe.
Oh, yeah, they do. They do. There's a lot out there right now that, you know, there's so many people that we've talked to that'll say, well, I'm just waiting for the bottom to fall out of the market.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been hearing that for 3 years, 4 years. And I got some people that should have some great equity in a home by now, but they've been waiting for the bottom to fall out of the market. And it's just not happening.
Oh, okay. So you're talking about the ones who did not buy.
Yeah.
That could have had.
Could have had. Yeah. Could have, should have, would have. They should have done it, and they didn't. And because the foreclosure crisis has not happened.
What's very interesting is we had some very tough decisions with people back in the pandemic, and they said, "Hey, you need to purchase now." And well, that's, you know, the foreclosures are going to take over the market. I said, "I don't think it's going to happen. I think the pandemic is going to be a blip on the radar, and you're going to miss an opportunity of these low interest rates." And people that missed that opportunity have come back to us now and said, "Oh my gosh, Brian, the interest rates are 6. We're going to go back down to 2. And I said, "Well, probably not in our lifetimes." So, you know, the key here is data-driven decisions. I think that's really, really important, is that you got to look at data. News is designed for fear, and it's designed to get you emotional and to keep you listening to whatever the next little fearful thing is. And you need to be looking at the data to actually have decisions made.
Here's some data for you.
What's beautiful.
So I pulled up the first sales for the first three quarters of 2025 in Fresno County. And this is for single family residences, PUDs, and condos. There were 4,644 sales. That's only like 20 sales less than the same period last year.
Right. Mm-hmm.
All right. Yep. So the market's not crashing or falling.
No, it's not slowing down.
But guess how many foreclosures were sold in the first 3 months of this year?
I'm going to say the number's really low because there aren't, you know, those deals are just not out there right now. They're not.
It is a very low number.
It is a low number.
26.
20 out of 4,000.
Yeah, 4,600, and it's 26.
Yeah, almost. Yeah, heading
so,
for 5.
So, well, you guys remember 2008 when, what, 2/3 of the sales were foreclosures?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Now it's less than 0.5%.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you look at that, you know, so we've been doing this 21 years. Yeah, married 35 years, and you know, we've watched a lot of different market cycles, and at the end of the day, it's really important to pull those numbers up and get what's called perspective. You know, people don't have that. They look at the moment, and when you're looking at real estate and real estate decisions, and as we all know, it's one of the largest decisions people make as a family, and it's the largest asset typically that most families have. And it's a decision that needs to be thoughtful. And I think more people spend more time looking at their next phone or their next car than they do actually looking at the process of buying a home or selling a home, which is a long-term decision. Mm-hmm. And so when you have that information, it's curious to find out what do the numbers talk about. So you're mentioning that. What do you think our market appreciated last year?
Probably about 3 to 4%.
Yeah, I would guess the same. I pulled it up right in the parking lot as we went outside. It was actually 5% in our market. Mm-hmm. 5% increase. As you look
increase,
at that,
not decrease, not increase. Falling apart.
Right.
That's equity.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Average sales price in Fresno, $430,000.
Yeah. You know, the other thing, not only did the homes go up 5%, and so there's more equity, but you got to use it. You use the home. So it's not just an investment.
Right.
It's something you're using.
Yep. Exactly.
If you're renting a home, you're
You're still paying a mortgage.
You're still paying a mortgage, just not your own. You can tell that, but that's our line. You're paying a mortgage no matter what, but you're just paying somebody else's. So
yeah, mm-hmm.
good perspective. Yeah. This is part of your data-driven wisdom.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think
he's a numbers guy. He's always figured when he sits down with people, he always says numbers don't lie. So I'm going to start with all the numbers, and then we'll talk about everything else.
When we do a market analysis on a property, we probably spend about 2 hours. On each house, and then and most of our colleagues are like, why do you spend so much time on that? Well, I say, well, I want to look at macro numbers, I want to look at our local market, and then I want to look at their neighborhood, and then look at the half mile radius, and then give them all the decision data that they need, and then beyond that, try to give them what's called choice. And it's really important that, you know, sellers have that ability to have choice. I mean, how important is it for, you know, you've been doing this how long, Don?
49 years.
It's so funny because
it's not a half century yet.
It's not, no.
Yeah, you've seen every market there is, right?
So he asked me, you're going to laugh at this. We're going to give you a hard time a little bit here. Because he said on the way here, what's your MLS number? And mine has 5 digits in it.
Here's his 18.
Only five, huh?
Only five. And so he goes, guess what Don's is? And I looked it up on my little app and I'm like, Don's only got 2. Yeah. You were one of the originals, man.
That's funny you bring that up. I get teased about that all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm number 43.
Yeah, I was at least you're not number one.
Right. I really think they were recycling numbers because I'm not that old.
Oh, that's just
I said he's a founding father. Yes.
I think it's awesome. That's awesome, though. Because you know it better than anyone.
Well, I've experienced a lot. Mm-hmm. And boy, going back to like the 1980s.
Yeah.
When interest rates were 18%.
Well, we like to share that. You know, right now, one of the things we've experienced.
We got married in 89.
Yeah, we got married in 1989. But when we work with these fabulous millennials, and I say that as you're listening, I love you all. I have 2 of you of my very own. But the bottom line is, you know, they were some of them were very shocked when the rates went back up because they were able to do whatever they wanted with good incomes when the rates were all down below 5%. And when the rates started creeping back up, they were having, you know, small aneurysms. And I was just basically, guys, our first house, we jumped at a 9.75 because it dropped below 10. And you know what? We knew that life would go on, but now we were living in a home that we were enjoying, that belonged to us, that we were gaining equity in, and we refied down the road. So,
I lived in a home for 22 years, and it was during a time when prices went up, they went down and back up, but none of it really mattered. Because we were raising our family there.
Absolutely.
And we were using it and enjoying it.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
So it's not just about the numbers.
Oh, yeah. We stayed in that first little house. We were
underwater in the early 90s when the recession hit.
We went underwater in both of our houses during cycles. But we held on to them and we lived in them and we enjoyed them. And yes, we raised our kids in those two houses that we lived in over 30 years. And it was great.
Yep.
I acquired a property at the low point, 2008, and it made no sense by the calculator to buy that home. Because the reason I did, the guy owed me some money, and it was my chance at getting it back. But I had to inherit a home that it was in terrible disrepair. I had to put a lot of money into it. But I did it because I believed in real estate.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So I bought it for $200,000, and it was probably, including the money that he owed me, and it was probably worth $160,000 at the time. So like I say, made no sense by the calculator. But I did it, and today I own it free and clear. It's probably worth $450,000.
Exactly. $450,000,
easy. I was going to say, and that's just it. You know, you have to look at the fact that it's over the long term, and if you are willing to throw the anchor over a little bit and live there, you're gonna You're gonna gain something valuable from it. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Well, I think the key there is in, you know, having some wisdom in the long term, and seeking that wisdom. So when you're in a position, you're thinking about buying a property, you need to seek that wisdom, and not just seek the data that you find online, but go sit down with a real estate professional and ask some tough questions about the market and what their experience has been, and get some guidance. Get some guidance and choice.
You said you spend a couple of hours doing a market analysis.
I do, yeah.
All right. How often has this happened? You spend a couple of hours on it. You come there well prepared.
Yep.
And you've got your recommendation, and they go, "Oh, that's great, but I know the house down the corner."
Oh, right. All the time.
Conversation.
There are a lot of those. There are a lot.
And I basically say to them, you know, here's the thing is that a comp is a sold property. It's not an active listing. Mm-hmm. And so the bank at the end of the day, they learned some hard lessons in 08, 09 about lending more than a property is worth, and they're not going to be doing that again. And so we like to get into the minds of an appraiser, and you know, that house for 450, you can ask, you know, 800,000 for it, but someone might say, okay, look at that house is priced at 800,000. But the bank's looking at it going, you know, it's not worth that. It's only worth 500. Mm-hmm. And that's all we're going to loan on it. So at the end of the day, the data is about the value of the property is really what the bank's going to lend on it. The only game changer in that is that something that we're seeing in the market, and you've probably noticed as we have, is that there's been an uptick in out of area buyers, especially from the Bay Area and Los Angeles markets, right? And we asked ourselves, why is that? Well, there's a lot of factors, remote work being one of them, mm-hmm. right? And they come in with cash and they write a check for a property. And so then that changes the dynamic as far as, you know, the value of the properties and why they've gone up so much is that they have those cash buyers that have done that without the appraisals needed.
You know, here's another statistic I want to throw out there, because I told you there were 26 foreclosures. Well, 15 years ago, we had a big thing called short sales.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And there were hundreds of those.
Only 10 short sales?
In the first 9 months. That's one a month.
Yeah.
Out of 4,644 sales. So people do have equity.
Well, I was just going to say, my comment was going to be what those first-time home buyers that have been waiting on the fence, waiting for that drop in interest rates, or definitely the crash in the market so they can get mm-hmm. that deal. The people that bought their homes, like you said, mm-hmm. buy a house for $200 and now it's worth $450. Bottom line is, the last few years, equity has gone up. That 5% we experienced this year is not an anomaly. It's been happening year over year at some point. Even 1 or 2% is equity. And so what happens is those people are going, okay, it's a tight month, or my job shift or something changed. I don't want to lose all that I have. This is my home. I'm going to tap into the equity. And because they've had that, we're not seeing them short. We're not seeing them like foreclose. And people need to understand that that's a part of being a homeowner. Is that you have that option.
Another dynamic is that you know, you had lending at the time that was called stated income loans, right? If you had a PACE and you could breathe on a mirror and fog it up, you could get a loan, right? And the classic story that we know in the real estate world is that you have the waitress that made quote $500,000, and she went and bought multiple properties, and at the end of the day, she did not make that money, and she got those loans, and those were foreclosures. And so that market is 100% different than today's market, when lending has been tight and strong for the last decade. And like Colleen just mentioned, you have equity in property. So it wouldn't make sense for anybody to have a bank take over a property that's sitting with equity. They will put it with a real estate professional and tap that equity by selling it immediately.
Which we've done a few times with buyers or with sellers. I mean, with my buyers, I can think of three situations in the last 2 years where they've just simply decided to sell their home when life changed and got rough, because they had so much equity, they had choices for a while. So they're not going to foreclose.
Right. I like that. They have choices or options.
Yeah. So even the homeowners do. Yeah.
And with that, we are going to go to our first commercial break. But stay tuned to Welcome Home Radio, 940 KYNO.
If I could just come in, I swear I'll leave. Won't take nothing but a memory. The house that built.
Well, welcome back to Welcome Home Radio. This is Don Scordino, your host. And here in the studio with us today, we have Colleen Souza and her best friend.
Yes.
Brian Souza.
He is, actually.
Both of you are 38
with, years.
Both of you are with EXP Realty. Uh-huh. So I take it you two are married. And how does that work out when real estate, you're both working real estate, you're both, I mean, do you talk about real estate all night long?
Well, it just depends on who you talk to about that. If you ask one of our children, they'll say they never shut up about real estate.
Yeah.
We have three kids, and we've been married, like Brian said, 35 years, together 38 years. And we have a 32-year-old and a 29-year-old, Tim and Julie, and they're the big kids because we had them when we were young, and we did the whole what felt like a very standard, normal thing. And then late in life, we decided, why not have another one? And so Gracie is God's little blessing, but she has just turned 20, and she's a junior in college. So she's, we call the other ones the big kids. But poor Gracie grew up during the 100% real estate days. Mm-hmm. And she has become a construction engineering major and wants to build houses and buildings because she's been around nothing but real estate her whole life. That's her twist on it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, do we talk about it just a little bit, babe?
That's about it. I mean, we bought a house and we planned on rehabbing it for like $300,000, and we ended up spending like $800,000 and remodeling. And Grace was a part of the whole process, and she watched everything happen, and she's like, you know, I think I want to major in construction management. So,
but yeah, we talked
to her about 2 hours about cement.
Yeah, it talked about stimulating conversation.
Yeah.
How did that set in?
It was pretty firm.
Yeah. You guys are a riot. Yeah. But no, we get along pretty good. I mean,
yeah.
People have asked us that over the years. We actually do work well together.
You know, you guys,
as long as he gets to be in charge, everything's fine.
Oh, there you go. We should do a segment sometime where no realtors in here, just the kids of the realtors.
That's,
oh my, a great,
gosh,
idea.
I will tell you what,
that would
I
be
guarantee
fantastic.
You talking to different,
yeah,
kids,
talking about
realtors.
Perspective. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember when my son was 18 and I was buying a house to fix it up and flip it. And I told him, why don't you go in partners with me? You know, you're old enough to legally contract. And when he saw my analysis, and he goes, yeah, I'm in. But I said, there's one condition. You could be a partner, and I'll put up the money since you don't have any.
Yeah.
I said, the one condition is you can't ever say, I know. Because that was, you know, at 18, that's all he ever said was, I know.
They know everything in 18.
Yeah. His comment
is, though,
I want to hear what his comment was.
His comment was, well, I've been listening to you all my life. I already know everything about real estate.
Well, no, I'm going to share with you along those lines. Our son, Tim, if there's a realtor listening on, they'll be able to relate to this. They might have worked with Tim for a couple of years during the pandemic. He was working in tech up in Canada, so he had to choose a country. So he came home to be with his family, and he got his real estate license and worked for us for a couple of years. And the hardest thing that he said about getting his real estate license and taking all the bookwork exam stuff was that he saw it in action, and it was really hard to study and take the test because there's the things you learn, and then there's the way that it plays out and really lives in real life. And so he said, oh.
He's like, Dad, newspaper ads? I said, well, the test's a little older.
But it was funny because he, you know, he confidently knew everything about real estate because, yeah, you know, hey, mm-hmm, I've been listening to it forever. Yeah, I know.
That's right. So, speaking of listening to others, let's get into something that you brought up about information versus wisdom.
Yeah.
And I really like that. We talked about it before the show, and I think we need to share that with our listeners because it's very wise.
So it's interesting because, you know, we have so much data at our fingertips. We have the whole world, the entire knowledge of the world at our fingertips, which is a pretty interesting time in human history that we live in, and the AI now that can ask questions too as well. But at the end of the day, what really matters is not the information, it's using the information in a powerful way. Mm. And you get that by wisdom. So people are drowning in data, but they lack wisdom. And so how do you get that? You talk to people who have been down the road before, and you get the advice. Like, for example, our CPA for our little company that we own, You know, why do we use a CPA? She forced me to do it because I thought, oh, I was, oh, TurboTax, you know, and
it's much fun to deal with him in tax season.
So 35 years of doing this, our company has only been around for what, 20 years. You know, when you do payroll and all that kind of stuff, you start looking at, you know, lot larger things, and you need to understand all the different chess moves, I guess you would call them, down the road. What's going to happen in 5 years? What's going to happen in 10 years? And those kinds of things. And I think the same principle applies to real estate. When people buy a home, they got to think, okay, how long am I going to be living in this home? What's the average family? You know, what is the average time? What do you think the average time frame for people living in a home is?
Well, I know back in the day, it used to be like 7 years, but I'm going to guess more like 10 or 12 now.
Closer to that, yeah. Yeah, so that's the range, 7 to 10 years. Yeah, so seven to 10 years. So if you're, you know, you're 25, you're buying your first home, and you're talking about being there until 35. And what we're seeing is pretty interesting because a lot of millennials have high incomes and they rent and they actually pay somebody else's mortgage.
Yeah.
Why is that? I mean, you're making $100K each, and you're $200K as a couple, and you're paying somebody else's mortgage. You're not gaining any equity at all. So what's happening there? Why is that?
Well, it's because they're seeing so much data and they're confused. So that's my opinion. You know, to throw my 2 cents worth in there.
Yeah.
There's so many.
You know, 2 cents isn't what it, worth what.
Okay,
it
so
used
I'm gonna
to
throw
be.
My $2 in there. All right. Oh, so okay. The bottom line is, I think that over, you know, with all, like Brian said, we have, you know, we hold in our hands every single day so much information, and there's conflicting information that comes out on that little device that we hold in our hands every day, and it's just important to connect with. That's always been my conversation. You know, when I interview or talk with somebody and they try to decide if they want me to be their realtor, I always say, you know what, you don't have to pick me, but pick someone. Yeah. Find an expert in the field, and if I'm not a perfect match, that's great, because this is a very personal thing that you're doing. You're buying a home, so find somebody that works with you. But find somebody. Don't just walk into an open house. Don't just assume that one of the big websites has all the data, because they're not looking out for your best interests. You need to find someone who will be looking out for your best interests, because all those websites, and I'm not going to name them because I don't want to offend anyone, but there are a number of big websites out there that have data on the homes, and they'll show you the history and they'll show you the tax records. They don't tell you the story of the person living in them or what's really gone on. And all of those websites have an agenda. And I guess that's the biggest thing. Just like the algorithms, if you stare too long at a TikTok, you got to understand that company has a purpose, and it's to not to have you work with a realtor that's going to take care of you. So, you know,
right.
The data. People see the headline, but they don't see the fine print. So, you know, even on those data-driven sites, they think, oh, I've got this number. Well, if you look at the fine print on any of those sites, they could say that their data is off by 10% or more. And so, depending on where you are in the market, if you're in the Bay Area and the house is $1.5 million, you're talking $150,000 is off. You're talking in our area, that's $50,000 is off. So that's a big swing. That's a lot of equity, and people talk about that. And every website discloses that. Their algorithm could be, their little number they put on there for the value of a property could be off by 10% minimum. And most people don't see that information because they just scroll through the next site, the next picture, the next house, and there it is. And it's interesting. So Colleen made a really good point, I think, is like, how do you choose a realtor? Who's your realtor?
Yeah. And you know, those websites, third-party sites, which, by the way, they
gather their data from us.
Exactly, from our multiple listing service.
Yeah.
They're scrapers. They're scraping the internet for data.
Yes, they are.
They put it out there. But here's the thing. Their goal, it's an advertising site.
Yep.
They
yep.
want you to work with their realtor that they're going to get a 30% cut on,
yes.
or whatever the
yes.
number is.
Yes, it is. That's why I say they have an agenda, and we have to be aware of the fact that, you know, and honestly, I mean, and this is just the philosophy of the Scissor Group, and that is, you know, when we represent a seller, we can count on both hands in 20 years that we've done both sides of a deal, because we like to represent our seller and know that we're 100% taking care of them. And then I want to represent my buyer and know I'm 100% looking out for their best interest. And so that's why it's so important to have a real estate team you're working with, because they're going to know you and they're going to know what you need, not the agenda of a company. So that's just.
Yeah. So I mean, you, I actually pulled that out because I thought you might ask the question. So we sold about $300 million of real estate, so almost 1,000 homes, and only 18 of those have been double-sided.
Wow.
Out of the whole thing. And so why is that? Well, our perspective is exactly what Colleen Neal is. You have to have a representative. And I would think half of those times, people actually physically sat us down and said, you sit there, we'll sit there, we're sitting at this table, and we're going to work it out.
And it's been special circumstances. But then what that gives me an opportunity to do is, well, I want to work with you. Well, I got somebody else that's really special that I know will take care of you, and it allows me to refer out and stuff. But, you know, it's just the bottom line is finding somebody that's your advocate.
Yeah.
When you go through all that.
And somebody that will give you local...
That knows the market, right. Yes. Yeah.
That knows the neighborhoods, knows the builders.
Right. So I had one, this is one of my favorite internet stories. So I called up a client and said, okay, it's been 35 days on the market. We finally have an offer. I want you to know it's very low. I'm not expecting you to take it, but let me come over. Let's talk about it. Let's make a counter offer. Well, by the time I got there, she said, you know, I Googled it. What do you do with a low ball offer? And Google said,
who's your best advisor?
Google said,
your best buddy Google.
Tell your agent to inform the other agent that you only entertain serious offers. So I was stumped. And I said the dumbest thing ever. I said, well, look, I've been doing this longer than Google's been around.
Right.
I'm telling you, let's counter offer.
Yeah. We watched Google get
created. We did, and it worked.
Good. Yeah. Well, and that's just it. And I mean, I think that's it because people, you know, I mean, it used to be, you know, when you talk to people, oh, it's your uncle knows more about real estate than I do. Now it's not that, it's just the information. And they think that it's all so much smarter than us.
That's right. But with all that great information we've been talking about, we're going to our next commercial break.
Okay.
Stay tuned to Welcome Home Radio, 940 KYNO.
I'm proud of the house we built. It's stronger than sticks, stones, and steel.
Well, welcome back. Welcome home radio. This is Don Scardino, your host. And first of all, I'd like to thank our sponsors, the Community Housing Council, helping people keep their homes. And also Judy's Home Decor at Bullard and West, where you can turn a house into a home. Now, our intro music was I'm Proud of That House We Built. How about I'm Proud of That Book I Wrote? Colleen Souza has written a book.
I've written
The Mantras.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Common Sense Wisdom for an Extraordinary Life. That's the subtitle for it. And
come on, you need common sense?
You know what?
That disqualifies some of us.
We need a whole lot more common sense. Thank you for letting me share about it a little bit. Yeah, I do have that book. It's officially available everywhere you can buy books on October 21st. So we're on that final 10-day countdown.
You're in
for
the
us.
Inside scoop right now.
Yeah, it'll be available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all those different places. But yeah, this is a book. People have asked why I wrote this book or what drove me to write this book and what it's about. Bottom line is we have three kids, as we shared a little bit earlier on another segment, and they've always gotten along very well, and they've always been really respectful. And over the years, people ask me, you know, what is it that you and Brian do? And I looked at Brian and I said, I don't know, what do we do? So we started to pay attention. And some folks know that before I came on board with Brian 15 years ago, I was a classroom teacher for 20 years. And so I use these same principles that I raised my kids with in helping teach my students. And then when Brian brought me on board to work with our company and be his partner in real estate 15 years ago, I started to use the same principles in our office and training agents that we worked with. And so I began to realize that there was something to these standards. Mm-hmm. So mantras are, just as a general rule, a mantra is something that's repeated over and over again, and it becomes kind of a principle for you, whatever it is. It can be about anything under the sun. And these are silly mantras. Like mantra number one in the book is keep your pants on. And it's about making good choices. When our son was little, he used to just get very high intense and stressed, and he would grab his little, he'd sit in the back seat of the car and grab his little pants in the car seat and just grip them. And I'd say, dude, keep your pants on. Make a better choice. So that's...
Are you sure he wants you telling this
story? Oh, he knows it. Are you kidding you? Are you kidding me? It's my kids are used to abject humiliation. But the bottom line is, it's 21 sayings. It's things like... leave it better than you found it. And it's about respect. Okay. So it's really, the book is more about the principles or the common sense values like respect and self-control, generosity, integrity, all of these different things. I can't yet. is overcoming obstacles. Always stop at the lemonade stand. It's about generosity. And so the book is just 21 principles. And I sort of think I told through the allegory of lots of stories of our family, lots of stories of my classroom, and lots of stories of our business, and the things we've discovered over time that help create a really good bedrock foundation in a person so that they can live the best version of themselves. So, living by the mantras.
All right. By the way, you reminded me of something. About 10 years ago, I had stopped at a lemonade stand, and I was just blown away with how mature this young girl was and how she spoke. So we had her here on Welcome Home Radio.
Did you?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I talked to her parents and said, you know, she's special. She's going to be something.
that's
absolutely
awesome.
And that's the thing about stopping at lemonade stand principle is that, you know, whenever the kids sell something, they're opening a little business. Right. And so at the end of the day, their little business could be lemonade. It could be cookies. It could be whatever it is. But if they're selling for a quarter, you better give them a dollar. Right. Because you need to inspire them to believe that they can have possibility thinking. And it's so yeah. important. And we've done that many years. And I think Grace, who's now
20-year-old was home this summer doing an internship.
Junior in college.
Yeah. She was doing a internship with Bush Construction this summer. And she walked in one day coming home from work and tossed me this little plastic card. I was sitting at my little office desk and had a little bracelet in it. And I go, oh, you're telling me you love me? She goes, well, I do, but I just want to let you know I stopped. That little girl was raising money for camp, and I gave her $10 for that. And right. she wanted to, you know. So it's embedded itself in my kids to always look out for opportunities to be generous and encourage entrepreneurship. So, yeah, so that's the positivity. That's what my book's about.
Think about the, you know, principles and mantras that we all grew up with, like a penny saved is a penny earned, right? And those little phrases are guiding principles, guiding lights. And in today's world, we ask people, what is your mantra? What is your mantra? What are some mantras that you operate your business by?
Just get her done.
But that's about hard work, right?
Yeah,
there. I mean,
it's about hard
and
work.
And that's the biggest thing I say as I go through my book is I'll show you what ours was. For, you know, when the job's too tough for some people, it's just about right. For me, is hard work, and that's because that's something Brian's grandpa used to say to him.
Yep.
And so he said it day after day to our kids. You know, when the job's too tough for most people, it's just about right for you. Mm-hmm. And so that became the mantra for hard work. Whatever it is for you, figure it out. But the most important thing is work hard. You know, that hard work is important.
When I was a kid, I read a book about the Seabees, the construction battalion with the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And their mantra is can do.
Can do.
Yeah. Can do attitude.
And
absolutely.
Yeah, what an attitude. I mean, and because it's saying that, hey, it might be hard. We may need to build a tunnel through that mountain, but we can do it.
Exactly.
Yep. Well, we might need to buy a home. But we can
we
do
can
it.
Do we it. Can yeah. do it. Well, yeah. Well, and that's just it. And one of my favorites in the book is you either win or you learn. And it's about adapting to failure. And I mean, maybe that and coming right back down to real estate, I always say that to clients and they'll tell me. I had one call me the other day. She's been in her home like 4 years now. In fact, I'm pretty sure, Don, that it was out at Quail Lake. I think it's a transaction I did with you.
Oh.
And so it's been a handful of years. But she called me because she heard about my book and she wanted to talk with me about it. And she said, I just never forgot that every time we didn't get an offer accepted, because that was back when things were a little more competitive, you'd tell me, we're going to find the winner. We're going to find the winner. And she goes, I love my home so much. Mm. And she's like, I'm so glad I didn't get any of the others. And so it really is a philosophy to have in life. In general, we either win or we learn. When something is challenging, and we don't get exactly what we want out of it, how can we learn from it and make it better next time? So there you go. Living by the mantras.
How long did it take you to write that book?
Well, you know, that's a funny question to ask. When I actually sat down to write the book, it took me about 6 months to 8 months. But if you ask my kids, they'll laugh because it was in some form, either in my, you know, everything starts in your mind and then you put it down on paper and then you do something with it. It had been in my mind on and off for about 15 years. And we would write little notes or make little jokes about it. But when I finally sat down to do it, it was during our youngest daughter's senior year. I got it done in about 6 to 8 months. Mm-hmm. But then I had to put it on the shelf for a few years because life happens. And we had some stuff going on personally. So I put it away. And about 6 months, 8 months ago, Brian said, pull it back out and let's do something with it. You've always wanted to. So hopefully the next one, because I have another one in my heart to do, it won't take quite so long. All
right. And I'm asking that because I'm thinking about writing a book. I already got the title. That's all I have in it. But
that's okay.
All you need, really.
That is
it's a guiding
something.
Light.
It's a guiding point.
It's called Donomics.
Donomics. I love it. I love it.
But you know, the mantra is don't spend more money than what you have.
You know, that's one that that's the brilliant. Whole freaking wide world needs to hear right now, let me tell you. No, you know what it is? It's about my biggest advice to anyone that wants to do something like a project like this. You have to find... What I learned is I had to have a dedicated space that worked for it. Mm. Okay. And it was at that time, it was the spot sitting on our kitchen table where I could see out the sliding door and out the front window. And I liked the view. And I would sit there either early in the morning or late at night. And I had dedicated time. And that's the two things, because otherwise you'll always find something else to do. So you got to find that space, because then when you sit down in that space, whether it's a room or a chair or whatever, it does something to your brain. You shift and you're like, okay, this is what I do when I sit here. Mm-hmm. And this is how I focus when I'm here. And that really changed my ability to get it done.
Beginning with the end in mind is one of the principles that are in there. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's, you got to think about what's your purpose.
It's about vision. Yeah. What it is. So I had to have my end goal and I had to have a space. And so that's the biggest thing.
Now, somebody might be wondering, one of our listeners out there, why would we be talking about this on a real estate talk show? And here's why. You see, realtors are just people.
Well, we really are. We really are. We're families. We're people, you know.
We have lots of different interests.
Well, and here's the thing. And when I have to say this, because I know it's something that Brian said over the years, when people, you know, we get paid by commission. That's how we get paid. You know, we help you. We help facilitate that transaction, and a commission comes out of that. And that's how we feed our families. Mm-hmm. And so when people are always trying to nickel and dime that, you know, one of the things that, you know, Brian likes to say is some people discount their commissions, and they should. But we work really hard for you. And this is how I feed my family. Mm-hmm. And this is, we're real. This is what we do.
First class service.
Here's a thought before we go to our next commercial break. I really believe, and maybe we could talk about this more in the next segment, but I believe the word negotiate is being overused in today's business.
Yeah.
Maybe a better term than negotiate is finding the right balance.
Sure.
We call that in the mantras, we call it a triple win. A triple win. And the reason why we call it a triple win is that the clients on both sides of the equation need to win, the agents on both sides of the transaction need to win, and the community needs to win. Everybody needs to win. Not a win-lose, because so many business owners, you know, I shouldn't say so many, but many principals are, I'm going to win, you're going to lose. No, it needs to be triple win. Everybody needs to win in this.
All right. The only thing is, Brian, I'm looking at the book, and you said we. I don't see your name on the book, Brian.
Okay, I do have to throw this at you. You said, what are dinner conversations like lately? It's about the book. It's a little obsessive. And Brian and I have done a little role reversal. So anyone that's worked with the Susie Group knows, you know, Brian, I call him captain. You know, he sits in the captain's chair and I'm just number one. I go out and do what he tells me to do. And I work hard and we collaborate. Don't get me wrong. But it is a role reversal. And Brian is learning how to let me be in charge.
I'm
going to
learn how to be an assistant, Don.
And let me tell you, there are some really good days and days I would trade him for a Diet Pepsi. So, you know, it's just the way that it rolls. I have to give Brian credit. He is 100% the biggest support system I've ever had. So, yes, it doesn't have his name on it. But if you read the book, you'll hear about him a lot.
Okay. All right.
You can go to livingbythemantras.com and learn a lot about Colleen. Yeah. And she's going to be on ABC 30 on Monday.
Yeah. If you have any questions, just livingbythemantras.com. And the website's there.
All right. Excellent. With that, we're going to our next commercial break.
Awesome.
But stay tuned to Welcome Home Radio, 940 KYNO. Welcome back to Welcome Home Radio. This is Don Scordino, your host. Here in the studio, we have Brian Souza and Colleen Souza, also referred to as Saint Souza, because the two of you have been married for
35 years.
Yeah.
All right. So.
Someone has to love him.
All right. And they work together in real estate. And who's the better delegator?
Delegating?
Yeah.
I'm really good at delegating.
I'm really good at saying yes, honey.
All right. What I hired a 19-year-old assistant one time, and after a few months, she goes, "Oh, by the way, I want to congratulate you on your personal growth." I said, "Well, gosh, thank you very much. What are you talking about?" She goes, "Well, when you hired me, you told me delegation was a challenge for you. You have that one whipped."
You got it mastered.
No, he is. He comes in, you know, we just shared about the book the last segment. And as we're as our table is divided between all of our real estate needs and working on the book, you know, he'll come in with a list. Or just, you know, walk in the room and start talking like I'm supposed to, you know, stop and suddenly do that. So I'm always like, write it down. I'll move to it next. He's an incredible delegator.
They call it ADD now. I didn't know that that was what it was called, you know, 50 years ago or whatever.
Earlier in the show, we mentioned dual agency, selling your own listing.
Yeah.
And you said you've only done it a handful of times.
Yeah, a handful of times, yeah.
And I can pretty much say the same thing. Why is it that realtors don't like doing that?
That's a question I don't have the answer to.
Well, I would say, why do we not like doing dual agency? Well, you do have an answer to that one. And that is that we want to be consistent.
I misunderstood the question.
Yeah. Why they don't like it that we, opposite.
Okay, so yes.
Anyways, it's because it's about taking care of people. And the business we've built over the last, well, he gets credit for having it rocking and rolling well before I came on board, but it's about building relationships with people, and we call the folks, we call it our real estate family. And if you're listening and you're a realtor out there, highly advise that you start to build that if you're just getting started, because we have probably how many percentage of our business is referral?
It's 88%. It's been that for years and years, but I think this last 5 years has probably been closer to 95%.
Of the sales and transactions that we do are because somebody in our real estate family told somebody else, "Hey, you got to use the Sousas." And we love working that way because then we develop around us this group of people that we enjoy being with. Yeah. And I think that's part of why
I'll answer the question because I misheard that. I think it's representative capacity is what it boils down to. And you have a fiduciary responsibility. So much like an attorney, how can an attorney argue both sides of a case? Mm-hmm. Is it possible? Yeah, sure, from mental act, you know, aerobatics activity, but is it truly representative of both sides of the equation? Very difficult, extremely difficult, because you do have a bias to represent your client. There is a bias involved in that, and you got to recognize that you'd have that. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, I think I had struggled with that when I first got my real estate license, then I got my broker's license, that you need to represent someone. Choose. And so that's why I've always represented one, you know, one side of the coin.
And it doesn't always come down to price. So it's not like I had one, what a nightmare, where the seller was supposed to be out on a Friday, but turns out they needed a little more time.
Sure.
Well, it turns out the buyer not only was all set to move, but they had a housewarming party Saturday. What a nightmare.
Yeah.
And how do you represent both sides on that one?
It's tough. It's rough. It is really, really hard. And I think that's the biggest part of it. And in the ones that we've done almost every time, it's been one of the parties together going, we want you to do this. But it's still dicey because, you know, it's not just about the financial piece. There's all of the other pieces involved, you know, the properties, conditions, the timelines, the family dynamics. It's craziness. Mm-hmm. Craziness. Yeah.
I've always said there's three different categories of negotiation. There's price, time, and terms.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So when you negotiate, you got to find the right balance. You know, maybe you give up a little bit on price, but you get time or terms.
Right. Right.
And you make it a triple win. Win.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And you got to think about that. How can you put yourself in somebody else's shoes? You know, so everybody wants the best deal. In all the years we've been doing this, and you probably have experienced the same thing, how many times have you ever had a seller say to you, "Hey, I want to sell for the lowest price possible"?
only once. That was my Uncle Sam.
Yeah,
he didn't want to pay taxes.
There you go. So there's always an outlier, an exception to the rule. But 99% of the time, I want to sell for the high. I'm not going to give it away. And then, you know, when you have work with the buyer, you're never going to say, "Oh,
I want to pay the highest price I can for a house."
Yeah. I want the best deal.
So they're coming in with different perspectives in the first place. So that's why you really have to be prepared for.
Yep.
Yeah. I got to add on to that story about my Uncle Sam. God bless him. He's up in heaven now. But
He's got better perspective than we do right now.
He also didn't want cash at the close of escrow. He was honest. He said, I'm just going to blow it. I'll spend it. He insisted on taking payments.
Really?
Oh, crazy. That's awesome, though, that he knew himself.
Yeah, yeah.
From a tax perspective, that's brilliant, actually.
Yeah. All right. So there is, how does technology play into real estate now?
I want to kind of rewind the time a little bit. So remember back before the internet?
I remember.
Yeah.
You mean the good old days.
We watched the turn of the century, right? We
before
truly
Google,
did.
Before Google.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, you know, at the time I joined the MLS, my digits are four. I have four digits, so 85, 86. And the time I joined the MLS, we had triplicate forms. And they were taught how to use a triplicate form. We use a white, yellow, and pink one, right? Mm-hmm. And that's how you did your paperwork. That was it. And then this thing called DocuSign happened. And I was one of three agents in the entire MLS that used DocuSign. And so I did that for a few years, and it caught on. And when I went switching brokerage, because I had my own independent brokerage, that was a requirement. I'm not going to tell you which. I interviewed three major players in town. And I said, I will use DocuSign. And they said, well, we don't use that. I said, well, then I was selling a lot of homes at the time. They said, well, I'll go to the other agency. Mm. And they said, well, we'll do a beta test with you. Let's see if people actually use DocuSign. And it turns out, what do you know? People actually started using DocuSign. And this is back when you actually had to print things out, right? Not on your phones or anything like that. And what the broker loved is that, oh, people are actually using this? Yeah, people are actually using this. And now, today, we can DocuSign on cell phones, right? So we want the speed of transactions. You remember how you used to fax things over on the copy machine and those kinds of things? So watching that technology change has been...
Yeah, I was going to say, that's one of the things that technology, I think, has done the most, is that it's changed the rate of the... I mean, when I first came on 15 years ago, we'd still tell people, well, 30 days would be a quick transaction. Now we're like 15 to 21 days, because between the lender and you and this, we can flip that thing like that. Yeah,
45 is like average too.
I remember one time I faxed an offer to another agent. He called me up. He said, get your butt in the car and drive it over here like you're supposed to.
Right?
Yeah.
Because we used to deliver them by hand.
Yeah.
To the actual offices. That's how we did it.
And I wrote up most of my offers on the hood of my car inside of Burger King. You know why Burger King?
Why?
Starbucks wasn't around yet.
I was going to say.
Denny's is where we did a lot.
Well, I was going to say, I did my very first, all by myself, because he'd always had Brian to help me. Even though we did everything digitally, he made me do it on paper. And I met somebody at a Starbucks to do it. And he wasn't with me. He's like, you know the contract. You don't need me to hold your hand. You can do this by yourself. I'm sitting there sweating bullets as I'm going through the paperwork, making sure I crossed every T and dotted every I. But technology makes it smoother and easier. That is for sure.
We used to have to buy books. Remember that? We buy books for the MLS.
Yeah.
Yeah, you put the listings in the books, and then you'd have the books, and you'd share those out.
Well, I would say the biggest thing I think technology has done is it makes the clients we work with think they know more than we do. So understand your agents do know what they're doing. They know.
Right. Well, we only have a couple of minutes left, so I want to ask you, each of you, what do you want our listeners to remember most about today's discussion?
My personal is to seek out and trust the advisement and lean on a good real estate agent or broker to help you. Because just what we were talking about, all the information that we gain and gather and have at our fingertips does not make us experts. Mm-hmm. I can go online and try to diagnose an illness on, you know, WebMD, but I really do need to talk to a doctor to make sure that what I'm doing is right and healthy for my body. These are our important finances. These are important decisions for our family. Don't lean on what you find on the web.
Yeah.
Find an expert that is local, that knows our market, and lean on them.
Yeah. Use some first principles thinking and begin at the end in mind and ask yourself, who's my realtor? And decide what that means, and then be intentional about choosing the right realtor for you. Whether you look online, look at reviews, whether you interview three or four realtors, however you do it, just don't stumble across one of the largest decisions of your life. Mm-hmm. Take time and actually investigate. It's really important to get that guidance. Mm-hmm. And then ask your question. What's the mantra? Yeah.
and I'm going to go off something. I'm hearing what Colleen was saying. It's important to use AI.
Yeah.
And that is agent intelligence.
Exactly.
Not
intelligence.
Just artificial intelligence.
Yeah, seriously. Lean into the human experience. And trust the people that know what they're doing.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to thank Brian Souza, Colleen Souza for coming in today. Also want to thank our listeners for tuning in every Saturday. We appreciate you, and we'll be back again next week. Stay tuned.